Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one. Yep, here we go.
Okay, good.
Okay, thanks.
Good evening. We're just about ready to start the fourth of five Willamette University phone casts. Congratulations to all of you admitted students. We're very glad to have you with us this evening, 6 o'clock Pacific time, with a one-hour broadcast here. This is Jim Sumner. I've had the chance to talk to most of you before. I'm the Vice President for Enrollment here at Willamette University. And as you may or may not recall, our topic tonight is student-faculty collaboration and scholarship. You know, one of the great, maybe the single greatest thing that a top liberal arts institution like Willamette has to offer is fabulous mentoring by especially smart, especially well-educated people who've dedicated themselves to this. And so that's going to be the topic that we're going to lead off with tonight. But since May 1 is coming close, we're also going to, in the second half of our broadcast, give you a chance to ask other questions you might have about Willamette and about student life here and other things, how one pays one's advance deposit, what happens once one makes their decision to enroll at Willamette, all of those kinds of things. So what I'm going to do right now is ask our panelists to introduce themselves, and we're going to start with Professor Eisenberg from the Department of History, and she's going to tell you a little bit about herself and her background, and then you'll meet the other panelists here in just a moment. Ellen?
Hello, I'm Ellen Eisenberg, and I'm a professor in the History Department. I teach American history from Reconstruction, the period after the Civil War, to the present, as well as a number of specialized courses, particularly on ethnic history, immigration history, and so on. I'm also affiliated with the American Ethnic Studies Program, and I have been at Willamette for over 20 years.
Thank you very much, Ellen. And now we've got a wonderful Willamette student who's with us, and I'm going to ask Rebecca to introduce herself and tell you a little bit about her background and what she's been doing since she came to Willamette. Rebecca?
Hi, I'm Rebecca. I'm a sophomore politics and Spanish major. I am from San Francisco, California, and I attended the Ruth Asawa High School for the Arts. I recently, over the summer, worked with Professor Eisenberg when I received a college colloquium grant. I've also worked at the Writing Center. I'm currently interning at the Capitol, and I'm a community mentor on campus.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. Before I give you a chance to meet our third panelist, I do want to remind all of you students, you admitted students out there, that if you have a question for us, just press zero on your telephone and you'll be able to ask your question. When you press zero, you will not be interrupting the speaker at all. So you'll be able to ask your question without interrupting. So don't hesitate to push zero and ask your question if you have one now. And next, I'd like for you to meet Professor Bowersox.
Hi, my name is Joe Bowersox. I'm the chair of the Environmental Science Department here at Willamette University, and I also teach in the Politics Department as well. I'm a political scientist by training, but I also do work in geographical information systems and sustainable forestry. And particularly in that latter role, I also oversee Xena Forest and Farm, which is our 305-acre sustainability field station just about 8 miles from campus.
Well, thank you all very much. We're very glad to have all three of you with us. One of the things that I would particularly like for Rebecca to spend a moment talking about is her current internship at the Oregon State Capitol. And the reason I say that is that some people don't realize how immediately accessible the Oregon State Capitol is, maybe 50 yards or less from the Willamette campus. We tend to think of it as a whole additional classroom building in some ways. So, Rebecca, tell us a little bit about your internship that's going on right now. In fact, you just came from there, I think, right?
Yes. I I got the internship because I'm taking a class that Willamette offers in the spring where you receive college credit for doing an internship at the Capitol. So that professor, Professor Michaud, set up a meet and greet between different legislators at the end of last semester. So I met a few legislative assistants from Representative Kenny Geyer's office, did an interview with them, and I'm now working with Representative Kenny Geyer. It's been a really beneficial experience for me because it shows what government work is like. And I think for students who are interested in public service and social activism, it's a really good opportunity to get involved and also receive college credit.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that a lot. Let me remind you students out there that if you press zero, you'll be able to ask a question and you won't be interrupting our speaker at all. Professor Bowersox touched on something that I think is unusual and important about Willamette, and that's the Zena Forest and Farm that the university owns, as he said, about 8 miles west of the campus. And it's easy to imagine some kinds of students utilizing that great facility. But Professor Bowersox, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about what goes on out there, what kinds of students might be attracted to it, and maybe some of those students who might be attracted, even if that's not the obvious connection they might have with Zena Forest and Farm.
Sure. I mean, oftentimes we think of a place like that that's a field station. We would assume that it would be utilized by students and faculty in biology or environmental science or possibly chemistry or something like that. But I think one of the nice things about Zena Forest and Farm is that it really has a broad appeal both across the curriculum and then within the co-curriculum too. So in addition to certainly our department in environmental science, we utilize it a lot for our labs and additional coursework and certainly our senior theses. We see a lot of students and faculty that are coming from other departments as well. A couple of my colleagues in history have used it very effectively. One of our historians has used it to study environmental history and actually have the students do hands-on environmental history that ended up producing a book that has just recently published. We've had art students and art classes go out there to be inspired. We've had the theater department out there, and we've also had a project that was done by one of our dance professors as well, where the students went out and actually, of all things, they developed an interpretive dance of sustainable agriculture, which was actually quite cool and fun to see the outcome. In addition to uses by classes, we have a lot of co-curricular activities that go on out at Zena, ranging from the Farm Club and the Sustainable Forestry Club to the Outdoor Center has been out there leading hikes, as well as they recently spent some time camping out there this past weekend. So it really ends up having very broad appeal across the undergraduate school. We are also seeing increasing use from the graduate schools as well.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Joe. The next question we're going to take is from Max, who's calling from Novato, California. Max, are you there?
Hi, I'm here.
Good. And I think you've called in before. Am I right?
I have. I called in last time, I think.
Yeah, good. Well, I appreciate you calling in. We all appreciate you calling in again. And go ahead and ask your question, and we'll see if one of our panelists can answer it.
My question is, are there any specifically student research opportunities or opportunities for students who are going into the field of psychology? And what are some of those, you know, popular options?
That's a great question. Thank you, Max. I'm going to look around at the panel here and see if any – we don't have a psychology professor included in our group, but Professor Bowersox says he would be glad to comment on that.
Sure. Hi, Max. The folks from the psychology department can participate in our Science Collaborative Research Program, where we see students teaming up with a faculty member to pursue a extended research project. This takes place during the summer and then usually carries over certainly into the fall. Also, students and faculty from psychology can participate in the LARC program too, which is the Liberal Arts Research Collaborative, which is very much similar to the Science Collaborative Research Program, where faculty and students develop a collaborative program together. There's other opportunities certainly too, and maybe one that our student here could talk about, which is the college colloquium, where students are allowed to develop their own project.
Yeah, depending on what your college colloquium is, you have a lot of leeway with what kind of proposal you can write. So if a student was interested in being possibly a psychology major, I'm not sure what the current colloquium offers are, but I know in my grade there was one about Freud, and I think there were a few other ones. So if a student were to take that and feel inspired to want to do research over the summer, they would write that proposal, turn it in by February, and then if that proposal was accepted, they'd be doing that research over the summer.
Well, thank you very much. Before we get to the next question, which we're glad to have, this might be a good moment to comment on what the colloquium is, because it is an important part of the Willamette curriculum, and I'm wondering if Professor Eisenberg might describe for us what the colloquium is, and then if she had something else she wanted to add, she can feel free to do that.
Sure. The college colloquium is in many ways an introduction to college learning. So all incoming freshmen will be taking the colloquium, and faculty from all departments teach the colloquium. And this is a place where we tell faculty, develop a course in whatever you are passionate about teaching. And the goals of all of the different courses are the same, to really focus on class discussion, on asking good questions, on critical writing, critical reading, and so on. And so students choose their colloquium sections. There will be a form once you've enrolled that you put down several of the options that you want, but a complete list of the colloquium sections is available already online. If you just go to our webpage and search for colloquium, you'll find descriptions of all of the topics. They're very very wide-ranging and very innovative, and the person who's your colloquium professor will also become your academic advisor for your first 2 years, or until you declare a major, at which point you switch to a major in your to an advisor in your major. And so that's a really good system. Rebecca, for example, was in my colloquium, which was about immigration, and I was seeing her, of course, several times a week in class. I was her advisor when she decided to apply for the colloquium grant program for the summer after her freshman year. Then I was the faculty who was the advisor on the grant. And so we had all of these opportunities to work very closely together, and that makes me a better advisor because I know what her interests are from all of that contact. The other thing that I wanted to add about all of these programs that we've been mentioning, the Science Collaborative Research Program, the Liberal Arts Research Program, and the Colloquium Grant, is that all of them are designed for student research in the summer, and in all of them, students receive a stipend that enables them to work full-time during the summer on their research grant rather than getting a different kind of summer job. In the case of the LARC and the Science Collaborative Research Program, that takes place on campus. And then for both college colloquium and for another program called the Carson Grant Program, students are proposing individual research that they might do here in residence or they might do wherever in the world it's appropriate to do it.
Thank you very much. That's great. Our next caller is calling from the state of Oregon, right here in Oregon, and she has, I think, a couple of questions. So please go ahead, and if you're there, is it Miley?
Yes, Miley.
Yeah, go ahead, Miley, and ask your questions.
Well, she actually answered very well the question about the colloquium. I had a question about, the roommate and housing application only. So do you select for during the studium before you get a roommate? Is that the situation?
Well, we do have Rebecca, who's an expert, certainly, in the campus housing situation, but I'm wondering if she could hear your question. Rebecca, could you?
No, Rebecca, I didn't hear it too well.
You want to, Miley, you want to repeat your housing-related, residence life-related question, please? We couldn't quite hear you.
Yeah. I was wondering whether you receive your roommate or you apply for which dorm you'd like to be in first.
Okay. So you're wondering if you get your roommate assignment first and then your housing assignment or vice versa. Have I got that right?
Yes.
Okay, good. Rebecca, is that something you know anything about?
I believe you usually find out both of those pieces of information at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you might, I don't remember, because I'm not in charge of the housing process, but I believe, I think you find out both at the same time, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and the only thing I might add is that once a student pays their advance deposit, which secures their place in the entering class, then they will hear from the residence life people, and that's when they will spell out for you all of your options in terms of housing, and they'll also spell out for you, ask you questions about what kind of roommate preference you might have. And if you have a friend who's coming and you want to arrange a room with that person, as long as you list the person and the other person lists you, then you'll room together. Otherwise, we'll do and have pretty good success in matching you with someone that we think is a good match for you. The next caller is Caroline, who's calling from Southern California, from Huntington Beach. And Caroline, if you're there, please go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah. Hi. I have a rooming question as well. I've just done a little bit of research on the dorms that are available, and I read about some of the more specified dorms, like the Terra dorm that's kind of focused on sustainability and outdoorsmanship, and I'm actually mm-hmm. committed as an environmental sustainability major already. So I was just wondering if the students that live in these kinds of dorms are very homogeneous, because I wouldn't want to be in a dorm that's completely homogeneous. I'm kind of looking to expand my horizons, but at the same time stay with some people that have the same interests as me. So I was just curious about that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And did you say you had another question as well? Or that was it?
No, that was my only question.
Okay, that's great. Well, Rebecca, the student who is with us tonight, the Willamette student, she's going to comment first, and then Professor Bowersox is going to comment as well. And the only thing that I'm going to add before Rebecca speaks is that I want to remind all of the students out there who are listening that if you have a question, just press 0 on your telephone and you'll be able to ask that question and you will not be interrupting the speaker. So by pressing 0 and asking your question, our speakers will be able to proceed with their answers. So Rebecca, you want to go ahead first, please?
Yeah, I'm actually fairly good friends with the community mentor in Terra. And from her experiences, she's also really, she works, actually volunteers a lot at Xena, and does is very involved in the environmental community here. It seems to me that there's a pretty wide variety of students who choose to live there. I know that Terra is a popular option for sophomores, but there are also freshmen living there this year, and there's also ASP students who move in there. And ASP students are part of the American Studies program here. And they're from mostly Japan, but I think there's also students from China and Korea this year. So I would say that although students are generally interested in environmental science, there's a pretty wide variety of students who live in Terra.
Thank you very much. Joe, you want to chime in?
Sure, I'll just add a little something. I think Rebecca covered it pretty well there, Caroline, that I think there is a significant amount of diversity in our themed dorms like Terra House. So I think, you know, one of the things that they try to do is to make sure that not everyone in there is all of the same flavor, so to speak, and so that you are allowed to have a good conversation and that you're allowed diversity of ideas there. I do know, you know, there's another one besides Terra House that our Kaneko Commons, which is our first residential commons on campus, is actually also themed towards sustainability as well as diversity and Japanese culture, which is kind of a unique combination of themes there that is becoming more significant for us as we look at trying to globalize our sustainability curriculum on campus. So I hope that you will think about coming here. We would love to have you. We're very interested and think we have a great environmental science curriculum here.
Well, thank you both very much. One thing was alluded to there that I thought I might comment on, and that is Willamette University does have a sister college in Japan and has had for just about 50 years. And the U.S. study site for that college, Tokyo International University, is immediately adjacent to the Willamette campus. And so there are Willamette students who live on their campus and vice versa. There's a complete exchange of facilities and that sort of thing. So I think part of what Rebecca was referring to when she was talking about students from Japan and other Asian countries is those students who are studying here in some ways for their year of study abroad. So thank you very much. The next question is from Olivia, and she is calling from Paso Robles, California. Olivia, if you can hear me, we'd love to hear your question.
Yeah, hi. I'm interested in the medical field, and I was just wondering what kind of opportunities the biology program has in, like, maybe interning at a hospital or somewhere else around Willamette.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I don't know that anybody on our panel is particularly expert on this, but I can comment on it. I'm looking around in case anybody wants to. I mean, one of the things that we like about where we are is that we are here in the heart of Salem, Oregon, and as you heard earlier, the Oregon State Capitol is immediately to the north of us, and the Capitol Mall then extending for a mile north. And then on the east side of the campus, we have the Tokyo International University's American campus, as well as the local Amtrak station. Downtown Salem is immediately on our west, but immediately to the south is a very large regional hospital. And so we do take advantage of that location and all of the ancillary medical offices that are there. And so for students who are interested in medically related things, it's not just pre-med students, but students who are interested in nursing and pharmacy and optometry and PT and OT and all of those related areas, can take good advantage of the big metro hospital that is here. And then the only other thing I would add is that the pre-medical and medically related students are pretty well organized, and so they get guidance relative to internships at the local hospital. So thank you very much.
Jim?
Yep. Oh, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I guess one other thing that I'd add is that a lot of our pre-med students also participate in WEMS on campus, where they're, it's the Willamette Emergency Medical First Responders, and they actually are allowed to, they get training here with EMTs on campus, and they actually then serve on campus on a daily basis and are oftentimes our first responders to anything that happens on campus and in the surrounding community.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of on-the-ground opportunities.
Yeah, that's a very good point, and I'm glad you reminded me of it. We've got a mother calling from Anderson, California, and she's got one or more questions. So is it Kelly Jones or Kelly Jones' mother?
Kelly Jones' mother.
Okay, Rachel.
She's at an FFA convention, state convention right now. My
okay.
question is, she is very interested in business, international studies, French, and also is very motivated to enter the MBA program that starts in the fourth year. And my question for you is, through FFA, she has really come into her own in terms of leadership and being able to step out and to learn about judging and teamwork and tremendous opportunities. I have two questions. How can you provide opportunities for leadership?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I might comment on that, and I'll certainly welcome others too, and Rebecca would be especially welcome. But when you realize that there are well over 100 student clubs and organizations on campus, ranging from the very obvious, you know, sports and music and theater and the newspaper and debate and the literary magazine and all of those things, but also including the much less obvious, those provide, you know, Professor Bowersox was talking about the WEMS, the Emergency Response
right.
Group. Those all provide awfully good leadership opportunities. But internships oftentimes, Rebecca was talking earlier about her internship in the state legislature. Sometimes that's a good way to learn about leadership as well. But I'd also suggest that Rebecca comment, because she's going to be studying abroad in the fall. She can talk about that, and that might help help you understand about study abroad opportunities for Kelly.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I applied to study abroad in the fall. And in terms of French, I believe that there are a few opportunities in Africa as well as a program in France. But since I wanted to go to Argentina, I ended up applying for another program that Willamette works closely with called ISAP.
Right.
And that kind of enabled me to be able to go to Buenos Aires, which is where that was my first choice. So Willamette's really good about letting students go abroad, especially in the language departments. I believe I'm going to be getting 3 credits by going abroad towards my major. So it makes it really easy for me to be able to pursue both politics and Spanish. So if your daughter is interested in French and international studies, that seems probably like it's completely doable. The other thing I thought about in terms of leadership opportunities for students who are interested in business is we have a business on campus actually that's completely student run called the Bistro, and it's one of the most popular spots on campus. And I know that there are opportunities for when you get to be a junior and senior for more assuming a managerial or leadership position within that organization.
Yep, that's a very good example. And Rachel, I a couple other things you touched on, and one of the things I like that Rebecca mentioned is important, and that is, yes, there are study opportunities in France, but there are also study opportunities in Southeast Asia and in Africa, where somebody can experience the developing world and at the same time perfect their French. It's also true that as students prepare for the 3-2 program. The MBA program, they are not required to major in any particular subject area. So, somebody who had a French major or an international studies major or some combination thereof would be very well prepared to enter the MBA program starting in the fourth year. And as you imply, it's a 5-year program, and at the end of 5 years, you get the bachelor's degree plus the MBA. So thank you very much. I think the next question we're going to take is right up Professor Bowersox's alley, and that's a call from another Rachel who's calling from Redway, California. Rachel, you want to go ahead and ask your question?
Thank you for accepting my question. So I am interested in going into environmental studies, and I know that Willamette only has environmental science, and I was wondering what the differences between studying the two are.
Rachel, that's a really good question. And actually, our department is called Environmental and Earth Sciences, but if you look at our curriculum online, you'll see that what we have is we are really trying to promote the notion that we want our students to be both scientifically literate as well as policy literate. So we share a common core that makes sure that students are exposed to some fundamentals in science and the physical sciences. But also within that core, students are required to take American politics, they're required to take economics, they're required to take ethics, and they're required to take some additional courses in geospatial analysis. But once they move out of the core, then you actually do get to specialize in either kind of a policy economics tract or in the social sciences, or you can specialize in the sciences, say if you wanted to do wildlife ecology or something like that. So even though we're called an environmental science department, we allow a tremendous amount of flexibility as you work your way through the major to specialize. We have a lot of students now that are taking courses in environmental history. We have a lot of offerings and specialty courses in environmental history. So we really try to find ways to work with the students so that they're able to explore their desires within the broad field of environmental studies and environmental science.
Thank you very much. That's a a great answer to an often asked question. The next question is from Carrie, who's calling from Eugene, Oregon. Actually, it's Carrie's dad, Graydon, who's calling from Eugene, Oregon. Do I have that right, sir?
You do.
Okay. Go ahead and ask your question. We're glad you called in.
Well, this is the standard parental concern question. I was wondering whether or not in your student health center you have any overnight beds available for students who might find themselves down with a bout of the flu or something. I know some other small colleges do, and I hadn't been able to find that out from your website.
And I can certainly comment on that, but Rebecca, is anything you know anything about as well?
I am not quite as familiar with that, actually.
Okay. No, I understand. Well, what I can tell you is that we are like a lot of colleges. We used to have a full-blown infirmary with a lot of beds for students. And like many colleges, we've moved away from that. The big advantage we have is the fact that we have the Salem Hospital immediately adjacent to the campus. And we do understand what you might be implying, and that is that the Salem Hospital is sort of overkill for a student who doesn't have a very serious ailment. But that tends to be what happens. The student goes to the health center where the nurse practitioner or the physician or the other staff there diagnoses the student, gives them some advice. And they're then either encouraged back to their residence hall room or to the Salem Hospital. And one of the things we do know is the students who end up in the Salem Hospital do get an awfully good attention from various staff members and professors here at the college. So the answer to your question would be no, there aren't any overnight beds, but I gave you a long-winded answer. So
thanks for the answer.
Yep, thank you very much. And the next question is one that we may or may not be able to answer, but I think it's an important question, and it's coming from Janet, who's calling from Auburn, Washington. Janet, you want to go ahead and ask your question, please?
Yeah. I'm wondering about opportunities for acoustics research and possibly internships in the area.
Okay. And tell us or me or all of us a little bit more about what you mean by acoustic studies.
Acoustic studies is a branch of physics and or engineering, depending on how you're looking at it. It's basically the study of how sound interacts with its environment.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I heard Joe, sounded like he wanted to say something, so go ahead.
Well, I guess if you look on the website for our physics department, you'll see that several of our faculty members in the physics department are particularly interested in optics and actually working with lasers, particularly. They are our neighbors right next to the environmental science department, and right now I'm not sure that we have anyone that's working in acoustics. But one thing that I would say that Willamette tends to do, whether you're in physics or environmental science, biology, or history or politics, and while we are a small school where we may not have anyone that immediately specializes in acoustics, we do have these research opportunities, say, through the Science Collaborative Research Program or the LARC program, where working with a Willamette faculty member, you can collaborate perhaps with someone off campus, maybe someone that's doing acoustics work down at OSU or maybe U of O or up at OHSU. And then you can actually have that sort of experience in acoustics in a small liberal arts setting. And so oftentimes, we find ways within our faculty that maybe we don't really have the same area of expertise that you might be looking for, but we find ways that you can maybe pursue your interests.
Good. Thank you very much. And the only thing I might add is, and it may be something that you're keenly aware of, but we do have our joint degree programs in engineering with our three partner institutions, Columbia University in the Ivy League, Washington University in St. Louis, and the University of Southern California. And between the three of them, The selection of engineering options is fabulous. Before we get to the next question, I did want to remind everybody that if you have a question, don't hesitate to push zero on your telephone and you'll be able to answer the question. And again, I want to remind you that you will not be interrupting the speaker if you do push zero and ask that question when you push zero. The other one of the things I wanted to circle back to, and it's actually a question that was touched on earlier, and I don't have the caller on the line now, but we were talking about the colloquium and things that can flow from the colloquium. And Rebecca, I believe, had a colloquium grant last summer, and I'd like for her to maybe spend a minute to talk about what she did and talk a little bit about the compensation she received. As Professor Eisenberg pointed out, one of the ideas of this sort of project is that we understand students need to work in the summer in order to help pay for college, but this is one way they can do something that is maybe a bit different than a standard summer job. Is that something you could talk about, Rebecca?
Yes. So my project, as Professor Eisenberg was saying, my project had to do with immigration. I was interested, we studied, the nice thing, one of the strengths of college colloquiums is that they're interdisciplinary. So we started the colloquium by focusing on the history of immigration in the United States, and then we talked more about contemporary issues and kind of a sociological perspective. We talked about issues that are affecting the current generation of immigrants. So what my project kind of intended to do was to look at the role of public education in facilitating upward mobility. So normally people think of immigrants pulling themselves up by their bootstraps. And a way that many immigrants did that was through public education. So I was interested in studying the ways that public education helped or did not help contemporary immigrants. So I did a series of interviews, which required that I applied for Willamette's Institutional Review Board, which is our process for assuring that subjects are protected. So I had to write consent forms. I had to ensure that my questions didn't put any of the subjects at risk. So then what I did was I was able to travel for a few weeks in early summer, which is one of the advantages of the process, is you are kind of allowed to create your own schedule. And then I got back to my home, which is San Francisco, and I started to do this research. So it was really difficult work, but I think I learned a lot about how to persevere through adversity and how to work with different organizations to reach the students I was interested in working with. And Professor Eisenberg was very helpful when I ran into problems. So in terms of compensation, aside, you can either choose to spend your money on traveling or you can choose it to replace a summer stipend. So the grant, the college colloquium grant is for $3,500. And aside from the expenses, like for example, I offered $10 for every student who completed my interview. I got to keep most of the rest of the money and put it in my bank account for the next semester.
And where did you travel to, just out of curiosity, before you went home to San Francisco?
I went to visit my grandma in New York City, and I also went on Birthright, which mm-hmm. was a free trip to Israel for students who are Jewish.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. I know that program, yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful. One of the other questions that we wanted to talk a little bit about, and I do want to remind listeners, by the way, that we are now at that point in our broadcast where if you have questions that are not directly related to the advertised topic tonight, if you simply have other questions you want to ask as you look towards May 1 and the national candidate's reply date, the date by which you need to decide, we'd be glad to take any of those questions. But one of the things that was alluded to earlier and something I think we want to talk a little bit more about, and I'm going to ask Professor Bowersox to comment on this, and maybe talk a little bit about some of the research projects that he's seen, been part of, observed in recent years that are tied to Zena Farm and Forest. Is that something, Joe, you might want to comment on?
Sure. It's actually something that I like to talk about. I mean, Zena Forest and Farm is just a tremendous resource for us here on campus, and I think one of the things that's been really exciting to watch over the years is the extent to which it has really engaged many of our students on various levels, and not just simply in the physical and life sciences or environmental science and studies, but also in other places as well. Just a couple of the projects that I've had the opportunity to work with some of my students. An early project where one of my students worked on examining landscape change on Zena Forest and Farm over time. That was based upon looking at aerial imagery and public land surveys. The aerial imagery goes back to the early 1930s, and we have it in time series up until the present. And then the public land surveys actually go back to the 1850s in our documentary with some narrative descriptions. And what's really interesting to see how the students puzzle through both those sort of the aerial imagery, and we have particular techniques where we can quantify that change, but also looking at those physical documentary records to see what's happened on the land over time. And I think is really what we're trying to capture with Zena, where we want our students to understand, from my perspective, environmental problems and environmental dilemmas from a number of different strategies or ways of knowing, whether it's kind of traditional historical research or whether it's kind of the latest in spatial technologies. I had a student that a few years ago that examined the transformation of the apple orchard on the property, which at one time back in the 1930s had 800 American pippin apple trees on it. And he was able to track how the demise of that apple orchard actually follows the demise of the apple industry within Oregon as it's supplanted by the globalization of the apple market with what's coming out of other places around North America and even Europe. So that was kind of an interesting project, I thought. We've also, as I mentioned earlier, had one of our faculty members in the history department lead a two-year project where students developed a very comprehensive environmental history of Zena that involved looking at indigenous use of the property over the millennia, as well as the role of European settlement upon the landscape, and right up into kind of the present concerns about biodiversity protection that are being raised by various public agencies. To me, I think, you know, Zena is just this great opportunity for our campus and for many of our students. I had a student that looked at trying to quantify rainwater catchment on the property for a potential use as opposed to relying upon other freshwater sources. So I think it's just a really good example of how at Willamette we really try and encourage students to come up with kind of unique projects that are interdisciplinary in nature and to apply them very, very locally.
Great. Those are wonderful examples, and we appreciate a lot. Thank you, Joe. The next caller is Taylor, and Taylor is calling from the great state of Hawaii. Taylor, if you're there, please go ahead and ask your question.
Hi. I'm wondering that within the 3-2 engineering program, is it possible to get an engineering degree at a university outside of the three that you're partnered with? And also, a second side to that question is whether it's what the three partner universities or a different one, will my financial aid still transfer over?
Mm-hmm. Sure. That's a good question, and I understand it. And since I have spent a fair amount of time with all of our engineering partners, I'm glad to comment a little bit on it. As you mentioned, the three partners are Columbia University, Washington University in St. Louis, and the University of Southern California. The advantage of choosing one of those is that because we've been doing those programs for so many years, the program with Columbia, for example, dates back to 1950, and the WashU program is nearly as old, and then the program with USC is certainly more than 20 years old. The advantage of choosing one of those programs is that it's a very smooth transition. Because it's a set program, there's the 3-2 version that we've talked about. There's also a 4-2 version where you can either get a second bachelor's degree at the partner institution or you can get a master's degree in engineering. But to come back to your specific question, the answer is yes. You can work out a 3-2 program on your own because we sit relatively close to Oregon State University, and they're the public engineering university here in Oregon. We do have students who will go there and, in effect, create their own 3-2 program. But it does require a lot more leg work on the part of the student because it's not a set existing program. And then the other thing I would say has to do with the financial aid. If you do 3-2 engineering, it is true that your financial aid at Willamette University ends when you go off to the engineering school. Columbia University, interestingly enough, being the furthest away from Willamette, has also been the most popular. And I think one of the reasons it's been the most popular is that Columbia is one of those colleges that meets 100% of the demonstrated financial need of every admitted student. So, because it's a well-reputed Ivy League institution, because it has one of the top 5 or 6 engineering schools in the world, those are attractions, but I think one of the reasons it's attracted so many of our students also is their financial aid policy is comprehensive. So, yes, you can create your own 3-2. It's going to be a lot of legwork on your part, and regardless of which 3-2 program you do, your Willamette financial aid will not go with you. But as I said, our partner institutions have certainly been generous in the past. As we look towards wrapping up our phone cast for tonight, I do want to remind everybody that we have one more phone cast. That'll be next Monday night, 6:00 Pacific time, just as the others have been. But it looks like we've been able to answer all of the questions that have come up tonight. And I know your time is valuable, and certainly the time is valuable for our panelists. So I'm not going to necessarily prolong this right up until 7:00 proper, but I am going to look around at the panelists and see if anybody has anything they want to add. And if they do, we'll give them a chance to add that. And if they don't, we'll move towards conclusion. I did think of one other thing that came up earlier, and I'm sorry I forgot to mention it earlier. Rebecca mentioned that she was a CM, a community mentor. And as all of you listeners probably know, most colleges have a system of students who work in residence halls, generally called RAs or resident assistants. And I thought it might be good for Rebecca to just spend a minute explaining what the difference is between our system and the one that is more common.
Yeah, so we recently transitioned our whole campus to a common system. The year before, Conego was the only residence area in a common system. So now Westside, Cornerstone, Eastside, and Conego are all on the common system. And there's a few differences between an RA and a CM. In my experience, the most important difference is that I think the community mentor has a stronger emphasis on mentoring and counseling rather than reprimanding. We're still in charge of, we're still supposed to uphold policy and to implement policy and ensure that our residents are implementing policy. But I think that we receive a lot of training on how to speak with students about problems they're having and refer them to other parts of campus, if those parts of campus might be able to help them as well.
Good. And we do, we have another question that has come in, and so I think we're going to go to Maura, who's calling
Hi.
From Hollister, California. Good afternoon or evening, Maura. Go ahead and ask your question.
I had a question about registering for classes and, like, how that works once you've, like, submitted for housing.
Good. I think we understand that question, and I think that's one that Professor Eisenberg is well prepared to answer. Thanks, Maura.
Yeah, I'm not sure I have all of the dates in my head for when that rolls out, but that's easily accessible on the web page. But registration will take place during the summer, and first you'll be registering for your college colloquium class. And as I said, there's the list and descriptions already online, and I think as soon as you've officially deposited, then you're able to start sorting through those and indicating your preferences. And after that, we have a summertime registration program that kind of rolls out in stages, and that involves a phone conversation with people from the dean's office who are facilitating that and kind of doing advising and making sure that people end up in the classes that they want. Then when you arrive on campus during opening days, your college colloquium begins to meet. And as I said before, the college colloquium professor is your academic advisor. So there's an opportunity there during opening days to make any adjustments that are needed in the schedule in consultation with your advisor.
Good. Thank you very much. Well, I think we are about ready to wrap it up. Let me just issue two more reminders. This broadcast, as well as its three predecessors, are all available online. This one won't be available online until tomorrow morning, but you can go to the admitted student website on the Willamette University webpage, and you'll be able to listen to this or any part of this broadcast, as well as any of the previous ones. And then once again, a reminder that our last broadcast will be next Monday night, just prior to the May 1 mandatory retirement date. But I want to thank all of you. More than 600 admitted students joined us tonight, and we very much appreciate you participating. And I very much appreciate our panelists who were terrific and provided lots of great information. And with that, we will conclude this evening's phonecast. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.